You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Back by no one's demand but our own from our home office here in Elizabeth Park in beautiful Nashville, Tennessee. 615 Sessions Podcast, A to Z Sports, A to Z Sports Nashville.com. You waited the entire time before you interrupted me.
Elizabeth Park?
We're in Elizabeth. That's the same way you opened the last time you were on here. Yes.
I don't see any park, and I've never heard of Elizabeth Park.
But there's green grass just across the block.
Have at it, brother.
That voice you hear is Paul Kaharsky, Midday 180, 104.5 The Zone, paulkaharsky.com, and all of the other various, the Elsewhere podcast, the Paul Kaharsky podcast, everywhere else you can hear my dear friend Chief Teron Davenport. Talking with TD is the podcast. You can read him on ESPN.com. Boys, we had to have a playoff meeting of the minds, and I think that we have accomplished that in this very room.
Well, thank God we got rid of Glennon, who you dragged in here last time I was here.
Hey, you swap one bald guy for another, right?
I did, but this bald guy just happens to be much better in front of a microphone.
Okay.
Bless his heart. No, Johnny texted me, and he was very upset.
Hurt. I know.
I tweeted out that we were going to do the pod, and he said,
his feelings.
Why was I not invited?
I told him, be better.
I said, Johnny, it's a very small room. You didn't make the cut. But we're going to talk about the Tennessee Titans, miraculous though they might be, heading to a wild card weekend with the New England Patriots. We're going to talk to Mark Schofield of Inside the Pylon. He's going to break down the matchup from the Pats side, and then we will come back and discuss all of the things as it pertains to the Tennessee Titans in 2019, the last podcast of the year. But first, we'll talk to Mark Schofield. Back here, 615 Sessions Podcast, A to Z Sports, A to Z Sports Nashville.com. This gives me great delight to be able to have our friend Mark Schofield from Inside the Pylon on, because it's Patriots week, it's playoffs week. God knows there are going to be enough comparisons made between these two teams over the course of the next few days, but it gives me an opportunity to talk to my friend Mark, and we haven't done it in a while, buddy.
No, we haven't done it in a while. It's been much too long, but it's great that we get a chance to do it. We get a playoff game to talk about. It's going to be a fascinating matchup to break down. And I'm just excited to be back with you, buddy. It's been too long since I heard your voice.
I know. Michael Kist, he's always trying to get on the show. He continues to try and push other people out. It's incredibly obnoxious what he's become. And I feel both of us are in part responsible, Mark. So we need to have a course correction here today.
We do need to have a course correction. There are times when I feel guilty. It's sort of helping to unleash what is Michael Kist on the rest of the world. But at the same time, he's a good guy. He makes me chuckle, so I think we're all better off in the end for it.
Amen. At Mark Schofield is where you follow my man on Twitter. Okay, this Patriots team, much is being made out of how vulnerable they have looked over the course of the season. They had a throwback performance against the Bills a couple weeks ago, but it's still the idea that they're playing on wild card weekend alone is a bit of an anomaly. It hasn't happened in at least a decade. Correct me if I'm wrong. I look, though, at them, and I think the biggest thing that stands out to me when I watch them, Mark, is that they seem to have a little bit of a pace issue. Like Tom Brady and that offense don't seem to be able to go no huddle at will and kind of control the tempo of the game, because it looks like he doesn't trust people out there. Is that accurate in your opinion?
Yeah, I think that's a great assessment of one of the, I'd say, many problems with this team right now, particularly on the offensive side of the football. And, you know, you can't talk about the 2019 Patriots without starting with Tom Brady and questioning, you know, where he is right now. You know, there have been a lot of people that have sort of said, you know, the cliff is here, the decline is upon us. And I think there is evidence that Tom Brady's not the same quarterback he was even a year ago. And I think it's more with a decision-making and mental process than anything else. I think, you know, the talent and the physical traits are still there. He can still make throws when he needs to, even though he's dealing with an elbow injury, which has caused him some problems. He can still move around in the pocket the way he does. He's not the world's greatest athlete, but he can use his feet to create space. But you're seeing, you know, slowness in his reads, slowness in his decision-making. He's not getting through his progressions as fast as he used to. And part of that might be that trust issue you alluded to, Buck, where he's now, you know, trying to piece it together with guys like Mohamed Sanu and Jacoby Myers and N'Keal Harry when he started the year with Josh Gordon and Antonio Brown. You know, he's trying to get on the same page with these guys, and you're still seeing some miscommunications, some routes where he's, you know, sees one coverage and throws what he expects to throw against cover three, but the receivers are seeing cover two, and they run a different route. And so that's been a problem for them. The offense has been so inconsistent this season, and we're seeing it over the past couple of weeks. Yes, you said, like you said, they had a throwback win against Buffalo. But I think what we saw this season is closer to what we saw against Miami, particularly from the offense, where, you know, they need short fields. It's hard to really trust them to go in and deliver on a, you know, 10-play, 85-yard drive. It's just been a struggle for them, and they haven't figured out their true offensive identity. This time last year, they had done that. They had figured out, look, we can be a power running team, run some play action. That's what we're going to be down the stretch. That's what they were into the playoffs. That's what they were in the Super Bowl. This year, they haven't quite pieced it all together yet, and time is seriously running out.
It feels that way, but that almost seems to paint too perfect a picture if you're the Titans, because they're coming in right now. Ryan Tannehill, I don't understand it, Mark. Ryan Tannehill is playing the best football of arguably any quarterback in the sport right now. The defense has gotten progressively worse over the course of the season. The injuries in the secondary have taken a pound of flesh from them, but they're still stout up front at stopping the run. This is kind of a worst case scenario if you're New England, if I'm looking at this objectively.
No, I think you're absolutely right with it. You know, it's Tennessee's probably that proverbial team nobody wants to see in the playoffs right now.
Ugh, and the worst cliche.
Yeah, I know it is. I hate saying it, but it's true. And especially when you consider that, look, New England needed that bye. And, you know, no team's fully healthy right now. We know that. But for New England, they needed that bye because Brady is dealing with his elbow issue that has hampered him. You can see him sometimes not fully following through on throws, and it's causing his release point to be off. Edelman's banged up. They needed this week off. They didn't get it. And so now they face a team in Tennessee which can do things which have traditionally given Bill Belichick teams and Bill Belichick defenses problems. They can run the football extremely well with Derrick Henry. That sets up their play-action passing game, and we all know, look, numbers tell us you don't have to have a great running game to be successful on play action. But you look at Tannehill's splits this year on play action throws, and, you know, from yardage per attempt on play action versus non-play action plays to completion percentage, he's great when they're using play action. And you also look at the fact that Tannehill is a mobile quarterback. And you look at this year, whether it's Mahomes, whether it's Lamar Jackson, whether it's Deshaun Watson, historically, even guys like Blake Bortles would give Belichick problems because he loves to play man coverage. He loves to play cover one. And when you do that, the quarterback can see the backs of defenders running away from him and green grass in front of him. Tannehill, certainly not shy about tucking and going when he can. There's going to be a lot of situations this game where 3rd and 6, 3rd and 5, do you spy Ryan Tannehill? And if you do, that leaves you shorthanded against guys like A.J. Brown. And man, you even got to worry about the fullback out of the backfield against this offense. So there's a lot to worry about from a New England perspective. There's going to be a lot for them to game plan for. And it's kind of a short week for them, too, with this game being Saturday night. So it's going to be a tough game for them. I think New England has enough, but I'm certainly not that confident about it.
Well, and the enough that you're talking about, one would imagine it would come defensively, because Gilmore was not good on Sunday against the Dolphins, and that seems to be the cornerstone, at least in terms of financially, certainly. But Bill Belichick defenses, he's typically, it seems, comfortable paying top-level secondary players who he can build around. And if Gilmore has a letdown game, then flaws begin to show a little bit. What were the Dolphins doing last week? Or was it just, you know, Gilmore had a tough game and it's tough to play quarter in the NFL at a high level for 16 weeks?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's certainly part of that. And look, DeVante Parker has certainly turned it on down
the stretch. What the hell is that?
He's become the guy that people hoped he would be coming out, you know, when he was coming out of Louisville. I think the other thing to keep in mind is that the Patriots, and this is sort of a hallmark of their teams recently, they, like you said, Buck, they'll pay premiums for cornerback play. They won't do it when it comes to edge rushers. We saw them, you know, they trade away Chandler Jones before he had a big deal. Trey Flowers was their edge rusher last year, was up for a big deal, got it 5 years, $90 million, but it was in Detroit. It wasn't in New England. And what that means is they don't have guys that can win one-on-one right now in terms of a pass rusher. They can do it, you know, here and there, but they really have to do it with scheme. And what happened last week against Miami was they weren't getting pressure on Ryan Fitzpatrick, so they went to their cover one, cover zero, blitz type stuff. But what that does is you don't have somebody in the middle of the field to reroute those crossing routes, to take away those slants and things like that, because you've got to bring those guys after the quarterback. And, you know, Chad O'Shea, the offensive coordinator for Miami, they were just throwing crossers and slants, and they didn't have anybody in the middle of the field to take that away. And then you turn on the Tennessee Titans tape and you see A.J. Brown running crossers and running slants, and you start to, if you're in my shoes, you start to get a little panicky and get a little nervous and a little sweaty and see those beads of sweat on your forehead, because you're realizing they can just do what Miami did. And if they can't get pressure on Tannehill, if they're forced to blitz like this and they don't have people in the middle to take those throws away, it's going to be a problem. I'm also very curious to see, Buck, if this is one of those games where Belichick goes into his past a bit. And this year they've typically said, okay, DeAndre Hopkins, Stephon Gilmore, you're on him. They've put Gilmore on the other team's top receiver. We saw week 17, obviously, with DeVante Parker. I'm wondering if they take their old approach, which is they take Gilmore and they put him on a Corey Davis or a Tajay Sharpe. And then they take J.C. Jackson, they put him on A.J. Brown with some dedicated safety help over the top. Belichick's done that before. He basically says, we're going to take away your best guy. We'll basically double him. But then when you try to throw the other guy, we've got our best cover corner on him. I know a lot of people expect the A.J. Brown, Stephon Gilmore matchup. It very well could happen, but it wouldn't surprise me to see Belichick going that different direction.
See, that's the thing that we've been talking about. You know, who do they target, the Patriots, defensively? Who do they try to best mask? And the easy reaction, I think, would be Derrick Henry, but he is particularly, he's the most irreplaceable thing that they have, and he's a special player for a reason. A.J. Brown would be the secondary option, but what you've just laid out there makes a lot of sense to me as I look at the matchup closer as we get closer to this game. Is the $9 million a year that the Tennessee Titans are paying Adam Humphries worth it just to keep him away from Tom Brady?
I think potentially, especially this year. Because look, this, it's funny, Buck. Over the years, we've often joked that the Patriots were at some point just going to say, forget it, we're rolling out the five slot receiver offense, right?
Yeah.
You know, we love slot receivers. We're just going to have five of them out there. And that's basically what they've got this year. You look at all of their receivers, and whether it's a big slot type like N'Keal Harry or a true slot like a Julian Edelman, they've got all these slot types. But with Edelman being banged up, and, you know, they, teams have taken him away by bracketing him, by doubling him at times and forcing Brady to look elsewhere, he doesn't quite have another guy with that skill set. Adam Humphries would have been a perfect fit in this offense for what they're trying to do right now, but he's going to be playing in the double blue this weekend. And so, yeah, it sort of stings when you look back and see how this offseason unfolded from a New England perspective. And you can imagine what, you know, like last year and 2 years ago when they had Amendola and Hogan, who were similar skill set type players, along with Edelman, they could run a very functional offense. This offense in New England would probably be a lot better with Humphries. But like I said, he's going to be wearing a different jersey come Saturday night. And so that $9 million might be worth, even if he doesn't see any targets from Tannehill in this game, just because he won't be seeing it from Brady.
I think the rest of the AFC continues to thank John Robinson for getting him away, for outbidding Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots for Adam Humphries, even though Humphries has not played in quite some time with that ankle injury. That may be worth the cost alone. You feel good about their chances, though, the Patriots. I can't get myself to believe that this would be the situation, that the Tennessee Titans would be able to beat the New England Patriots at home in the playoffs. It seems too picturesque. Something's going to happen that makes this Patriots leaning, I would have to imagine.
Yeah, I mean, I still think New England finds a way to win this. I think it's one of those 24-20 type games. I think it comes down to the final possession, or, you know, at least the second to last possession, and the New England gets a chance to just kneel on it. But I'm in no way comfortable. I'm in no way confident. I certainly wouldn't be placing money on this game, at least in terms of the Patriots covering. It's been one of those years. And when you sort of take a step back and you look at the schedule that the Patriots have played, you realize that of the top five teams in the draft, they played four of them. I mean, they played Cincinnati, they played Washington, they played the Giants, and they were 1-1 against the Dolphins. I mean, this is a team that when they've been tested by good teams, they've lost. You know, they've lost to the Baltimore Ravens, they've lost to the Kansas City Chiefs, they've lost to the Houston Texans, the other three division winners. You know, they had two tough games against the Buffalo Bills, who are also in the playoffs. Every time they've played better teams, they've struggled. And you could say, yeah, well, they beat the Eagles, they beat the Cowboys. How good was the NFC East really this year? And so they've had their struggles along the way, and it seems to be a situation where they haven't really, you know, early in the year, yeah, you could say they put some complete games together against the Redskins or the Dolphins when they were bad. But down the stretch, they haven't played a complete game where both sides of the ball really clicked. Even that game against Buffalo, they, you know, needed some breaks to go their way, and they needed some plays at the end to go their way, which they didn't get the following week. And so it's hard to be truly confident. You know, it does seem strange that it would be the Tennessee Titans to sort of end the dynasty, or whatever people are calling it, but dynasties end in strange ways. And we've seen it with different teams before, and, you know, they needed this bye. They didn't get it. It's a bad spot for them. Do they have enough to get by Tennessee? Yeah, am I confident in it? Not really. And would I be surprised if I wake up Sunday morning and I'm talking draft on my show? Not at all.
His show, by the way, is The Sco Show. Rate, review, and subscribe wherever it is that you get your podcast. You can follow my man Mark Schofield on Twitter at Mark Schofield and read him at Inside the Pylon. As well as, I saw you're doing some work from our friend Matt Waldman. So that is always informative and educational if you are a football junkie such as myself. My brother, a pleasure as always. I look forward to heading up your way here in a couple days, and we will see if the revenge tour that Kyle Van Noy was talking about yesterday does indeed begin with the Tennessee Titans.
Take care, my friend. Enjoy it this weekend.
Back here, 615 Sessions Podcast, A to Z Sports, A to Z Sports, Nashville.com. Teron Davenport, Paul Kaharsky, Buck Rising, hanging out. 2019 Tennessee Titans, what the hell? Go.
A tale of two teams. I think that's really the first thing that I think of. It's a team that was 2-4, then they went 7-3, and it's once 17 got under center, it was totally different. So that's the thing that stands out for me. In addition to that, I mean, look, you know, you always try to be objective, but Buck, you know, AJ Brown is a guy who I was very fond of in college. And seeing him come in and do what he's done has been outstanding, too. So that stands out to me.
The offense this city has craved and been waiting for the entire existence of this franchise in Tennessee. To which I don't think we've given, I don't want to say credit, because I did a whole podcast about how credit and underrated and overrated is too much of a thing. But For how long we've waited to see something like this, I don't think it's gotten the fanfare that it warrants. I mean, what Tannehill's done is absolutely ridiculous, and you still see people out there either pining for Mariota, talking about drafting a quarterback, or just not sold on it. I don't see what's not to be sold on. I mean, he's on a list with Sammy Baugh and Joe Montana mm-hmm. as the only guys to complete 70% of their passes and throw for at least 9 yards per attempt, which absolutely unheard of.
He's quantifiably the best quarterback in the sport this year.
With a rushing king, with a 1,000-yard rookie, which is unheard of in the passing game here, where I've time and time again said, look at these meek, soft guys that they're drafting over and over, all of the same personality. Now they got this go-getter
yeah.
who's got some swagger, who yeah. got in the face of Taylor Lewan when he was dragging the right. team down. Who's got, you know, he's not a Terrell Owens, but he's got some pizzazz to him.
You know what he is? He's a dog.
Yeah.
That's what he
– And they've had a lot of
he
cats.
He got that dog in him.
And they've had a lot of cats. A
lot of
in
cats.
In the wide receiver section of that room.
There's another word for cats that's not FCC safe. We won't go there.
But no, wasn't thinking that.
I don't know, Chief. I don't know. I look at this, and you're right, because it seems every time I log on to social media, I'm sure you guys are the exact same way, people are still looking at them in a way that does not deserve this kind of criticism or this kind of skepticism. Like, mm-hmm. I, for the first time in my life, have been accused of being a Tennessee Titans homer because
really?
I'm trying to tell people, look at what they're doing. For 3 years that I've covered them since I moved here, I have not enjoyed watching them. Teron, we've talked about this before, going down to Jacksonville in week 3, and you looking at me and said, I really did not enjoy watching that football game. That doesn't often happen
Boys,
to me.
There's been a hell of a lot of that since all the way back. I started in 97, which is when they were the last year in Houston. I mean, I sat in press boxes in Cincinnati, old Cincinnati, a lot of the old stadiums around the league. There's their MO, even when they were winning, it was ugly, unpleasant football. And for years and years, they said, hey, are they ever going to modernize this offense? Every year we said it was going to be an offensive football team. We'd stand in training camp and we'd say, this is finally going to be an offensive football team. Guess what? 6 weeks later, defensive football team. Lucky to get some first downs and kick a field goal at the end. They're lucky as hell they haven't had to kick a field goal at the end this year because they don't have a guy that can kick a field goal as far as we know.
And the offense hasn't needed it. I mean, Greg Joseph, third
Maybe
person.
He can.
Greg Joseph, we haven't seen it yet.
Maybe
TBD. But is it as simple as the record? Is it as simple as 9-7 and people just have this sense of staleness with them? Because the whole thing that I would say is not all 9-7s are created equally. Like the Buffalo Bills team that backed into the playoffs a couple years ago, the last time the Titans made it, that is not the same Buffalo Bills who are in the playoffs this year.
Well, look,
obviously.
I think they hurt themselves with the good to great pledge. Mm. Now, maybe they execute on the good to great pledge if they go pull the upset on Saturday night, or maybe it takes even a little bit more than that. But this hasn't been good to great. It's been good to better.
What we thought
record
it
wise,
be.
It's been good to the same. I think it's a better 9-7 than last year's 9-7 for sure. It certainly finished better and won the game it needed to get into the playoffs instead of losing the game it needed to get into the playoffs and all of that. But, you know, when you're pledging good to great, we're expecting you to be Houston, at least, hosting the first-round playoff game, or better yet, you know, not playing in the first round of the playoffs, conceivably, and they didn't make that jump. So they come up short of the expectation they sold everybody, and that's a flaw in the marketing, if not in the football team.
I think there is reason for optimism, but you're right. The good to great thing, it hasn't been achieved.
It's an anchor around their neck.
Yeah, and it's funny because it was mentioned
today. They haven't
today
mentioned it.
And during the presser, Vrabel's presser. But I think at the end of the day, when you have a quarterback like Tannehill who's achieved what he's achieved, and then you have A.J. Brown playing the way he has, Derrick Henry, they have their own version of the triplets.
They've gone good to great at those three
at those,
spots,
those spots
with the output.
Unfortunately for the defense, you have these holes in the secondary because of the injuries. So and the special teams have been issues. So that is an area where they could go good to great, you know what I mean, if you want to use that mantra. But, you know, end of the day, I think this is just a team that is pointed in the right direction. I think there's more optimism than when I first got here. Now, granted, that was when Vrabel got here, but a lot of the people that I've talked to, they said that in that building, things were very stale. I don't know if you could attest to that, but there's a level of excitement now. So I think that's the good thing in it.
Well, you mentioned two things that have gone wrong this year, which totally obvious. The second day, when you suffer multiple injuries at the same position, that's always trouble. So Butler and then Jackson going down, that hurts you. Limits what Logan Ryan could do if Adoree's not back. And if he is back, it's probably only a third down roll, right? So you're limiting what Logan Ryan can do. He might have been limited in this game anyway because he's got to take care of Edelman. And so you're not blitzing him and leaving these young corners alone back there and all of that stuff. The special teams stuff, predominantly kickers, been an issue. The one issue we didn't touch on there is the damn outside rush issue, which, listen, is it Vrabel not being supplied with guys? Obviously, he hasn't been supplied with guys. Has he said, I can make do with what we have? They certainly talked a lot like that. Like, hey, we could scheme it up. A lot of times he said, hey, we could scheme it up. Well, you can only scheme up so much. Yeah. And now Harold Landry, who came on, though maybe three of his nine sacks, though, were the quarterback kind of going down near the line of scrimmage where he was just kind of
cleaning
up.
They were less meaningful.
Right. They're sacks. You know, the numbers are the numbers. They're sacks. But he wasn't drilling a guy 11 yards deep. And where's he been the last, what, around 3 weeks?
That's the thing why I said what's happened. He ended the year on 9 sacks. Come on, man.
He had 9 sacks 3 weeks ago.
You take it, but like you said, he had 9 sacks 3 weeks ago.
And this is where you need him to be peaking, not
right now.
Fading.
You need him. Sacks come in bunches. You ask any premier pass rusher, they'll tell you that. And for him to not come into the playoffs on some type of hot streak or in some type of groove is a bad thing. However, on the opposite side, Derek Roberson is in that groove, and you're seeing him start to get pressure.
With not that many snaps.
Right. I mean, this dude is basically one sack every 10 snaps.
And what they're telling us is...
And Correa's played better.
Correa has been much better.
But still, I mean, to be playing with those three guys, think, you know, and look, they addressed a lot of stuff with a lot of stuff, but that's got to be mission number one, and it's been mission number one for a long time, and they've not gone and found one. And then you don't claim Suggs.
Right.
Shaquille Barrett was cheap by the time he signed.
That was
worth a flyer.
It was worth
a flyer.
They're
very nonchalant about that, the way they're nonchalant about touchback.
They're nonchalant in a way that reminds me, because there are many comparisons that are going to be drawn over the course of this week to the New England Patriots and the Tennessee Titans, rightfully so. But they remind me of each other in two specific ways. One, the only position they seem willing to spend big money on is secondary players. That's what Bill Belichick wants to build his defense around. I think that's something that is very important to John Robinson as well. Secondarily,
they spend big money on a left tackle.
And a left tackle, who has been much better as of late, but
wasn't
less
great against the Saints, but he settled down his last 5 out of the last 6 or whatever.
Well, I think your interview with Eddie George on the Midday 180, I think he has been a much different personality.
You think that was a trigger?
I hadn't thought of that. I think that's exactly what that might be. But the larger point being, they don't seem to value pass rush in a way nobody else but New England doesn't emphasize. Like, they let guys like Trey Flowers walk on a regular basis. They traded Chandler Jones before he was
Chandler
due.
Chandler Jones is great. Player.
And anybody could do with a Chandler Jones. Is that what we're... Do we think that's what we're seeing? They think that they can... Because they were able to scheme up pressure when the secondary was right. But then it all goes to hell when you lose two of your corners.
I think that is what you're seeing. Very rarely do you have a team that's outstanding on the back end and outstanding on the front end. It's usually one or the other. Where
it's kind of like starters or relievers.
Right. Yeah, you don't consistently have that staff. That's what my Mets tried to get, but, you know, that's a different conversation. You know,
save it for the off-season baseball podcast.
Yeah, you're going to make me punch one of these walls, man. I got to get off of that. But, no, seriously.
Punch the shed.
This next-door shed.
You got me choked
this
up.
This next-door shed is really something.
We're taking a tour. I'm telling you. Team effort after
I'm not
this.
Going in there.
But all jokes aside, I think what you have is them investing in the secondary with the understanding that that will allow them to make do with less up front. You look at the Patriots for a while, Rob Ninkovich was their best pass rusher, right? Their most productive pass rusher. But you look in the secondary, you know, you had McCourty, you had Chung, Gilmore now. You know, so they had guys that could make things happen. But like you said, with these injuries, now all of a sudden with the Titans, you got Ty Smith out there. You got Tremaine Brock out there. Look, all respect due to them, but those aren't guys that I would just be like, okay, you know what? I want you a man against him. No, and what happens when you blitz all the time, right? Because if you don't have that dog, that guy up front, you have to blitz. What happens when you blitz? That forces them to play man defense. Your best cover guy is one of your best blitzers, and Logan Ryan. So that makes things a lot rougher.
And he's not a guy you'd want to leave on an island with a speedster. Yeah, he's a very good cornerback, but he's not your traditional outside.
He doesn't have the same kind of recovery speed you need to play with those kind of guys. What does this say, though, about the rest of what they have up front? Because Jeffrey Simmons, to a point, Jeffrey Simmons seemed to be a good deal of the reason why Harold Landry was getting home. He was attracting more attention. Harold was getting more one-on-one matchups, and that seems to have dissipated. There have been plays where you notice him, and he's an interior defensive lineman, and that's a difficult thing to notice on a play-by-play basis. But what can they expect more of him? Is it reasonable to expect more of him based on where they are and what they need up front, especially in a game like this?
Well, I think you have to expect more of everybody this week. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, Simmons is tailed off as a play-to-play guy. You know, and that first game, he set such high expectations because he was so impactful.
Everybody thought they had the next Ndamukong Suh.
Right. And I can't remember how many plays it was. What was it? 16, 18, 22, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. He was phenomenal, you know, and then the interior defensive guys don't do that if they're not Ndamukong Suh or Aaron Donald. And he's not done that, but he's been impactful, like you're saying, in spots in a game like this. You know, the easy recipe for the Titans would be that he and Casey provide that interior pressure that last year in the game was coming really from Ryan and Woodyard and who else
looping
was coming
inside.
Up the middle.
Good point.
You know, Woodyard's a non-factor really on defense. Now, what did he play, 9 snaps this last game?
It was single digits. Like, yeah. I think it might have been 5 even.
Yeah. Which is fine because the other guys are better than he is. But again, if you're sending those extra people, you're asking for a lot of from the coverage guys who aren't that good.
Yeah, and then even with Simmons not collapsing the pocket as much, now you're forced to play more games, right? So you have to have Roberson loop from the outside inside to get that. Because this week, it is imperative to collapse that pocket. It's imperative. You want it. That's the worst. Brady hates that. So anytime you could push that pocket back to him, that's when you see him start patting the ball. You see him, you know, moving around, getting a little frantic in the pocket, and then that's when you got him. But if he has time and if that pocket could collapse from the outside, he'll just work his way up and move within it. But if it collapses from the middle, it's a problem for him. So that's why Simmons is very important. That's why Casey is very important. And they've started using Casey on those loops inside as well. They have to absolutely have to find a way to collapse that pocket, especially, you know, when you look at these guys on the outside. Granted, I know Jacoby Myers. I know N'Keal Harry. I know these guys have not done.
They have a bunch of slot dudes.
A whole lot. Well, but I mean, even.
They also haven't been going against Ty Smith and Tremaine Brock.
That's the thing, right? So I guarantee you, you know, it's the Patriots. They're going to have something different in the cookbook. You know, they're going to bring something different out. I guarantee you they're going to take shots down the field. You cannot take those shots down the field if the pocket's coming up in your face. So that, to me, is Brady's kryptonite. That's what you absolutely have to do against this guy, because otherwise he'll pick you apart.
And some of those loops you're talking about take time. Right?
Yeah.
So you need the Simmons and the Casey right away to get some push to make Brady uncomfortable right away. If you're doing the loop stuff, even if it's effective, he gets rid of the ball so quickly.
Yep.
That by the time some of that stuff works – He's already found somebody, James White, you know, that, mm-hmm. that play happens in no time. He's not worried about a long developing game up front. A long developing game up front might invite that.
Yeah. And you know, the thing that really frustrates me about these DBs, you don't see them up on the line of scrimmage.
Why?
Because they're scared. Because if you're up on the line of scrimmage, you get manhandled. The guy's behind you, and you're done.
Yeah, and that's the thing.
And they can't not be scared of that, no matter what. It's the human nature element of it. I think even if they're being told to get up there, what are you doing, Buck? You're saying, this guy's going to get past me, and I'm going to be dead. And it's much better that he beat me for 15 yards than he beat me for 50.
Yeah. And that's more stress on the safeties too, because now they have to cut. It's a bad. I don't like the way they give that free release, and especially against the offense. You saw against the Saints, right?
Yes.
Everything's timing, you know. And in this offense, everything is timing. So as a receiver, I know my quarterback's three steps. I'm 1, 2, 3, bang, and I'm into the top of my route, and I have to be where I have to be because he's letting the ball go. It's all timing. So the other thing that you have to do as a guy up front is understand if your pass rush isn't going to get home and Brady raises the arm, you got to raise your arm. It's all about – I guarantee you, as we see practices during individual period, you're going to see Coach Williams, Terrell Williams. He's going to raise his arm.
They're defensive line.
They're going to match his hands. That's what Jeffrey Simmons did in the interception against
J.M.
Texans.
Brown, where he got it in the end zone.
He matched his hand, and that's what you have to do. So when you're facing a guy like Brady, it just forces you to think about so many things, and that can make you play slower too.
And that's where you need the kind of break where it happens like it happened for Simmons. What game was that, New Orleans? That was
New Orleans.
The Texans had the two turnovers that should have undid the game and didn't. But where that ball – instead of getting batted down, gets batted up, and you catch it instead of Julian Edelman sliding in to
catch
it.
There was a circle of Titans waiting around that football.
Right, that ball, and Blake Bedingfield said on our show, that ball was getting picked off even if Simmons didn't touch it.
Yeah.
The way that things were covered, and that it was a bad choice by Watson to even think about throwing it where he was thinking about throwing it.
We mentioned timing and offense, and this is an offense right now that doesn't appear to have it, even though it is Tom Brady and Josh McDaniels and all of the whole Patriots axis of evil, if that's what you want to call them. They don't have wide receivers who he seems to trust. When I watch them going over the games the past couple of days, when I watch them, the thing that stands out to me most is their inability to control pace in a way that I'm used to seeing Patriots teams doing. They have issues running the ball. He doesn't look like he can go up-tempo when he wants to because he doesn't think that the wide receivers are going to be there. I think that Edelman is hiding something in terms of injury.
Oh, he's banged up.
Because he doesn't look right. All of this makes people feel like they have a legitimate shot to go into New England and do something. But I'm not optimistic. Like, I think this is a totally different game than they've played all year long. Like, this is a totally different situation against an opponent who knows them better than anybody, particularly in a year where you can dismiss joint training camp practices if you want. But the Cincinnati Bengals sure as hell would not if they were sitting on that opposite sideline going through what they just did with the Patriots. I just think all of it sets up too perfectly for the Titans in a way that we're going to see something that they don't expect, and I think the majority of Titans fans don't expect.
I mean, I think they've got a good chance, but I'm not going to, declare them winners, and I won't be surprised if there's a bounce or something happens that goes against them.
And they shouldn't be 4.5-point dogs, but
no. And I think Belichick's thing is, and I was working the locker room a little bit on this today, they're gonna sell out to stop Henry one, and they're gonna sell out to stop Brown two. Now the Titans have done a pretty good job of getting plays from Michael Pruitt and Khalif Raymond and guys like that. Can they string enough of them together? If you think Bill Belichick isn't perfectly happy on the crucial third down of the game to have the Titans throwing to Pruitt or Raymond or anybody like that.
Rashard Davis, who made a catch that nobody expected him to catch.
That was a good catch.
It was a good catch.
They'll take their chances with that. And they'll take their chances that at Foxborough, with those banners hanging and flapping, even if the weather isn't that bad, in an atmosphere.
Be like Beyonce, they'll put a fan behind it and just let it blow.
In an atmosphere where every single person in the building expects the Patriots to walk out with a win, even though they didn't get their bye, that something will happen and that Raymond or Pruitt or whoever it is won't make that play. That's what they're banking on. And that's where my doubt comes from, because it's worked that way for so long.
Until the end of time.
Here's the thing. The Patriots always, like, their focus is taking away what you do well. That's why I asked Coach Vrabel about the balance on offense and having the triplets, so to speak. Because now, okay, let's say you go and you try to take away the running game. That's all fine and dandy, but that means outside you're going to have one-on-one coverage. Right, J.C. Jackson, Jawan Williams against Corey Davis, Stephon Gilmore, who's very likely to travel with A.J. Brown. But with that one-on-one, what ends up happening with this is Jonnu Smith against Patrick Chung, I think, is advantage Titans.
Yeah, I do too.
And the tight ends have consistently done well against the Patriots. So I think Jonnu Smith is a big factor in this game. And to your point, okay, it comes down to Jonnu Smith. What are you going to do in this situation when it's third and everything? Are you going to come through or are you not going to come through? And like you said, they're banking on him not coming through.
Two things shock me in football this year. One is their offensive output. The second is how much watching A.J. Brown and Jonnu Smith and Derrick Henry and the way that they all play through contact, nobody else – I mean – George Kittle is obviously an entity unto himself. Like, he legitimately does not believe that he's going to get tackled. But these guys, if you're talking about in a sport where the practices have been legislated to the point where you can't have quite as much contact, they display on a play-by-play basis. Vrabel has told us on Monday, that it shows up on film. People don't want to tackle them. And I think that is I was kind of worried about an offense built on yak in the offseason, but turns out if you can break a couple tackles, the yak is much more impressive than throwing it in front of the end zone rather than throwing it into the end zone the way that we saw Marcus Mariota doing a lot of the year.
Well, here's the thing. We mentioned Tannehill, 70% completions, over 9 yards average per completion. How many times have you seen him literally push the ball 30 yards down the field? It doesn't happen often.
Not that often.
Most of the time, 41-yarder was. Most of that 47-yarder, unbelievable play.
But people will say 91 yards to A.J. Brown against Oakland is the longest completion of his career. Well, how many yards were on the back of A.J. Brown?
To your point about these guys playing through contact, most of the time, that's what happens, and that's how you get these big chunk plays.
But I think the stunning thing about it is, I think most of us, especially before watching this team for 16 weeks, think of Yak and we think little. Adam Humphries would be the guy coming into the season that I would have thought, Yak, not huge Yak, but a couple yards at a time.
Three or four yards to get you the first
time. You probably saw my tweet. I went back to look at how many receivers got 1,000 yards on 52 catches or less. The most recent one was DeSean Jackson. I picture guys like that doing what we're talking about. And we're talking about big guys. Henry is a big bruising back. But he's not really a big bruiser. I mean, he's big. There's no questioning the bigness.
But he's not.
But is he a bruiser? I mean, the stiff arm part is a bruising part.
Right. It's taken him a long time to get there.
He's running away from people more than he's running over people.
Yeah.
A.J. Brown is running away from people as much as he's running over people. And Jonnu Smith's running away from people as much as he's running over people. So, yeah, nobody wants to tackle these guys. They're a combination of bigness. But they've also got this deceptive speed, the trio. And that's what makes them unusual. This is unusual yak to me. Yak is a little quick guy thing to me, generally speaking. That's the guys I think of, right? You think of small, quick guys who can run away from people, and this is not that.
Yeah, see, for me, when I think of yak, the first guy that comes to my mind is Andre Reed. That's because he's my favorite player ever.
Sure.
But then I think of guys like T.O., A.J. Brown, I will say this, and Buck, you remember me saying this at the combine, I've always felt he was the best yak receiver in this draft class. And Paris Campbell, I had as a close second. But there's just something about the size is definitely important, but there's just something about that mindset and that ability to instantly convert to a running back when you get your hands on the ball. And the thing is with A.J. Brown, with his yak, and like I mentioned with Tannehill, I'm not taking anything away from Tannehill, because the fact that he is able to throw the ball to A.J. to a point where it makes him accelerate to the ball, that's a huge thing. That's a big part of him getting that yards after catch. You know, that accuracy. Yeah. And I think that pass that he made for the 51-yard touchdown against the who was that last week? The Texans, I think that showed it. But there's just a degree of confidence with A.J. Brown that it's different than a lot of rookie receivers.
God, it's so refreshing.
I shouldn't say smaller, like I'm making it sound like short. I'm saying slighter of build.
No, you're thinking...
I'm not picturing muscled up.
The pterodactyl that they have wide receiver is a yak guy. That's not who you picture. The dude who looks like he's wearing shoulder pads.
Picture skinny guy.
Helmet and shorts. This is not... You're right. This is uncommon in terms of what they're able...
In terms of body type.
I agree with it, because he's built like a basketball player, honestly. Like, when I think of he looks like a power forward to me.
Right, a power forward as opposed to a two.
Right.
I picture twos or point guards.
I get it.
Being yak guys.
So, from a larger, as we get ready to wrap this thing up, last podcast of the decade, Teron Davenport, Paul Kaharsky.
Of the decade. The decade which started with you April. As well. No, but the decade was started
that,
with
that
you
picture,
as well.
Was that the start of the decade?
There's a picture of baby Buck.
With my ass hanging out for all to see. I thought that'd be nice here in the here in the home office. It fits in. So does my neighbor. Walks around with his pants down the whole time. Larger themes. Because I look at, you know, they kneecapped our expectations for them after Denver. Like, I don't think what we thought this team was supposed to be at the beginning of the season, I think we are there now and probably above expectation because rushing champ, A.J. Brown, Ryan Tannehill, highest level.
I was scared we were going to be in Teron's season and he's going to start talking draft.
No.
Blow us all away.
You know what, to be honest?
You were too.
I started to make plans for East-West Shrine Week. I was like, yes, finally – I could go to St. Pete, go to Tampa for East-West Shrine Week, man.
Yeah, no.
Glad you're not going.
Not so fast. We're going to New England, boys. Much different weather. Larger themes, though. I said as soon as their season ended that if they made the playoffs, I think that John Robinson should be executive of the year in the NFL.
No way.
Okay, well, then I'll invite your pushback here in just a second. My case being that it is not the Patriot way that they have adopted here in Nashville. In fact, it might be the antithesis of the Patriot way, which is to pay all the guys that have been cast-offs from New England. And the single most important personnel decision that I think was made in 2019 is Ryan Tannehill as the backup quarterback. Whether they planned for it to look like this or not, I think that that man deserves the executive of the year in the NFL. Paul, why don't you start with the pushback?
He completely mismanaged kicker, and they should have won at least two more games on
that's
that. On ISO. That alone, okay. he shouldn't receive a vote.
That's
for
the black mark. That's the black mark. Does it start and end with kicker for you?
It starts and ends with kicker for me. He had a very good year with the draft. Simmons, A.J. Brown, Nate Davis has settled in,
but he's a starter
and looks like he's a sufficient starter on a line that came around and was very good. Humphreys this year's a wash. Saffold settled in, and that's the gist of it personnel wise. After Tannehill, Reggie Gilbert, Tremaine Brock, bit players, but I don't have him off the top of my head. I'm sure there's somebody that's done better work than that. Also, if I'm passing out awards on this team, first has got to be A.J. Brown, Rookie of the Year.
Yes.
People are pushing for Tannehill as comeback player of the year. Let me tell you, first off, that goes to generally to somebody coming back from serious injury.
Garoppolo.
He's not. It's probably Garoppolo. Also, it comes back from somebody who is, if not injury, from absolute crap. Ryan Tannehill had a decent year last year. He was
the whole thing on
serviceable
him was they couldn't
NFL,
figure out whether he was good or not in Miami. Mm-hmm.
He was a serviceable, mildly successful NFL quarterback last year. He's not coming back. If there was a breakthrough player of the year, he would be it. And then I think Derrick Henry could be offensive player of the year. MVP is going to be Lamar Jackson. Then you look to who's the next best offensive player generally, and it may well be him. So John Robinson isn't even, you know, at best is the third award winner for me, and I think the Titans would be lucky to get two.
Offensive player of the year, I'd probably go with Christian McCaffrey, the 1,000.
My thing on them is that they dropped off terribly in the last five, six games.
And when the Titans were pushing forward, surging ahead, Derrick Henry was
carried.
Oh, how the tables have turned, State Farm, just like the commercial.
I
love McCaffrey, and his achievement was ridiculous. But I think I'd sit down and look at those two guys side by side.
Oh, yeah, they definitely need to be looked at.
Sort through.
For sure. I don't know that I could give him executive of the year.
I just look at what else is out there and how big that move for the backup quarterback was. The company.
He had no idea Ryan Tannehill was going to be this.
None of us knew that Ryan Tannehill was going to be this.
It was just an insurance policy. You know, it's just the same as the Eagles in 17. They had no idea that Foles would be the Super Bowl MVP, but they said, you know what? We're going to pony up and bring him in so that way if this guy goes down, he could step in. And I think that's really what happened in this case.
I mean, you could, off the top of my head, and I'm not thinking of what Baltimore did personnel-wise beyond Lamar Jackson, but they built that team around Lamar Jackson,
it's
which is a very, very dramatic change of thinking.
It's the Ravens. It's the Ravens because they brought in Hollywood Brown, right? Marquise Brown, to give that vertical threat.
Four tight ends capable of being receivers in an offense where you need to trust the tight end.
They added Hayden Hurst. I always felt Mark Andrews was the better player, but, hey, he was the first-round pick. No problem. They added Mark Ingram. They went out and got Marcus Peters. I would have to say Eric DaCosta.
And
in his
had
first
the best
year
season.
Calling the shot solo outside of Ozzie Newsome.
Transformative thinking that could have a ripple effect in the league.
Which is such an indictment of the NFL that it takes people that long to figure out. No, do the things that your players do the best. Don't try and fit them into what you think you do well. The Ravens are like talking to Coach Mack when he went and called the Texans Ravens game on the Titans bye week. He was like, "That's the most fun I've had. One of the most fun games that I've watched."
That said, I do think a lot of people, and I'm you know, put me at the top of the list. I mean, Lamar Jackson wasn't good last year, so a lot of us are taking grief for not believing in him coming into this year.
Well, I watched him not complete a pass in a playoff game for an hour.
I didn't believe in him coming into this year based on what I saw last year, which wasn't good. I believe in him now because they reshaped things around him, and he got substantially better. So
both of those things.
He's a different – both can be true. He wasn't very good last year, and so I thought, well, I have a hard time expecting him to be good. They transformed things. He got a lot better, and lo and behold, he's damn good.
I think he wasn't very good last year as far as a rookie quarterback in the league over his head, so to speak. I've always felt that he was a better passer than he's gotten credit for. The dude threw for 9,000 yards in college. And stats aren't everything. I'm the first one to admit that. But
that's a big
you don't
stat
do
like
that,
that
without having some type of talent, you know. And even in the second half of that Chargers game, he showed potential to make some plays.
All valid points and a very valid podcast that
and maybe
we have
we'll
done.
See him in a week.
That's right. That's
perhaps.
Right.
Look at you.
Get some crab
Paul
cakes.
Kaharski, optimist. Look
at
this.
I didn't say I'm optimist. I'm just not dismissing the idea.
That's a long way from where we came in Denver. I'm still very upset about that Denver game. It's been
the Denver game, the Jacksonville game.
That's because you got leaked on in the press box. That was a particularly bad experience.
They should have changed. I don't have an objection to them seeing Marcus as long as they saw Marcus. They should have changed quarterback in that game for the second half of that game, and they might have won that game.
It might have started if you can make an indictment of them outside of the kicking. It's that they waited too long.
I don't think they waited too long. Here's my thing, though. I go in circles because I say See, a lot of people want to blame them for not changing quarterbacks sooner. I want to blame Marcus for not playing better. You blame Marcus for not playing better. If he played better, then they wouldn't have made the switch. Then we wouldn't have gotten what we got. So it's very circular.
You don't realize you're not allowed to do that? Like, we cannot blame Marcus for anything.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Twitter, when he went into the game, I was ready for an explosion. I thought that people were going to lose their damn minds. Yeah. And that it felt like they were trolling all of us because what our Twitter mentions would look like.
Unbelievable. Can't say anything bad about him. I just did.
There you go.
Listen, if you love Marcus, I'll say I've said it on any platform I could get on. If you love Marcus, and everyone listening to this does, because everyone does. If you love Marcus, the best thing you could do for Marcus is set him free.
Let him fly. Yep.
Set him free.
Someplace else.
Don't call in and say they should re-sign him to be the backup. It's the dumbest idea ever. Set him free.
I'm going to set you guys free. You guys have been good sports.
And you love us. So you're setting us free.
It's true. Paul Kaharsky of 104.5 The Zone, Midday 180, 10 to 2, Elsewhere Podcast, Paul Kaharsky Podcast. And, of course, you can read him at paulkaharsky.com.
That sounds exhausting.
It is exhausting. Teron Davenport also has an exhausting schedule, writing for ESPN.com. You can check him out on the Talking with TD podcast. Rate, review, and subscribe wherever it is that you get your podcasts, as well as the live show, which I assume will continue on Friday nights, at TDavenport_NFL, at Paul Kaharsky NFL on Twitter. Boys.
Enjoyed it, boys. Fun.
Yeah, thanks, it was good. Doing it.
That being said, I'm Buck Rising, reminding you to stay hot, Nashville. We will talk to you on Thursday with Will Compton and Tiffany Blackman of the NFL Network, right here on the 615 Sessions podcast, brought to you as always by A to Z Sports and A to Z Sports Nashville.com.